This podcast is given to you by Arloka David Smith, teacher and founder of the Dharma Mind Buddhist Group. For more information, please go to dharmamind.net.
I thought I'd follow on from what I touched on this morning and try to build a slightly bigger picture. I think it's quite a challenging one, actually. It's actually, really, it's the most fundamental issue that we all have with ourselves and on a day-to-day experience. Not just that, but also the history, our past and stuff. And that's the fundamental aspect of this training that we need to wake up to, and it's actually the biggest challenge of all, and that is owning our stuff, our thoughts, words and deeds, all of our history, all of us, all that goes to make us up as this personality, which is our past and our present and our relationship with life in the here and now, as it were, is to grow into what I believe to be the most fundamental challenge, and by golly, it's a challenge, of life, is to take responsibility to own everything that we think, say and do, because we don't do that, actually. We do some things, usually when it's convenient for us or when it's not particularly challenging, but what we do is that we, so much of our life experiences, we project, we dump on other people, situations, and it's nothing to do with me. And having that way of dealing with life is that we don't take responsibility for our reactions to these things. But when you practice the Dharma, there's no picking and choosing with the Dharma. You can't just pick and choose as it suits you, or what the bits that you like, or the bits that you think you can deal with, and other bits that you can't go near. So you cut your life experiences up, and then you consider your Dharma practice to be here, this bit here. This is the bit that I'm focusing on. That's not how it works. You know, we chant every time. It's a famous expression, famous saying by one of the Zen masters: the great way is not difficult, it only avoids picking and choosing. And that is, well, that's it. But that is massively challenging, picking and choosing, because that's exactly what we do. We pick and choose what we want to take responsibility for. And the bits that we don't want to take responsibility for, we dump on other people. And when you dump things on other people, then nothing to do with me, Gov. I can't do anything about that. That's outside of my outside of my practice. That's something that I can't do anything with, so therefore we shut that to one side. Well, you know, that's how we live life, and that's how we live life. You know, we rock and roll through life, dumping stuff on other people and events and situations, and we become the victim so often of events, of our experiences. As I say, the essence of that is that we never step into the possibility that actually that's a possession of mine, that's something that I can do something about. And this morning, although this is, I mean, this is only just a sort of a way in, it opens up into something much bigger. You know, just I say, like the heat that we're experiencing at the moment and how we can so easily become slothful and fall asleep on the cushion. And then say, well, it's the heat. Well, I can't do anything. It's too much. So I get dozy and I fall asleep, and I'm blaming the weather. It's the weather's fault. Well, yes, of course, it's hot. Nobody can deny it's warm, and it can be very challenging. I mean, this afternoon it will probably be... it probably will be challenging. But you have to own that situation. Okay, you know, you can't do anything about the heat, but your relationship with the heat, with that challenge, is up to you. Whether you say, you know, I can't, oh, it's too much, I'll just sort of hang on and get through to the day, or you can say to yourself, well, I'm not going to succumb to this, I'm not going to be the victim of this, but actually I'm going to be very alive and very awake to it. Of course I can't do anything about the experience of the heat, but my relationship with it, I can have a particular relationship with that. I can become the victim of that, so I can't do anything about that. And then you become dull, and you fall asleep maybe as the end product of becoming dull. Or you can say, no, I'm here to give of my best for the day, and I'm going to evoke virya, energy, commitment, and not be sucked into that. So you evoke that inner commitment, not a willfulness. I mean, you must be careful about being willful. There's a very fine line here, and you have to see the difference between willfulness and commitment. There's an inner commitment to not be the victim of this. It's not to make a problem. It's not to make an enemy of the environment. But just I'm gonna be alive. I'm gonna be awake, and evoke the virya, which is one of the major features of our training. Virya, which is energy. But it's more than just simple energy. It's where the energy is coming from, the motivation of the energy, that you want to stay present. That's all. Is that you don't want to possess anything or whatever, but you just simply want to be present. And to be present, and until you are present, you're never going to get to know yourself. You'll be dull. You won't be able to open up to yourself and see your world. So that virya is so crucial, and this type of situation, maybe this afternoon, is when you need to focus on that more. You need it in your life, in your daily life. Virya needs to be there all the time. It's called commitment. If you don't have commitment, then you become dull, and you won't be alive to what's in front of you. You won't be alive to yourself. It's called, as I was just saying, it's being aware. Awareness needs to have some life to it, otherwise it becomes dull. And even if awareness is there, awareness comes in different degrees, if you like, different degrees of clarity. And that clarity is only possible when there is commitment, the virya. Because we all have stuff that's either is going to pull us into dullness or pull us into distraction. And to have that focus and to be present with what's in front of us takes commitment. And you have to decide if you want that. Because if you don't have it, then what you have will be so diminished to the point where, you know, you question yourself whether you've got practice in the first place, or how you considered what your practice is about. Practice is about being in the moment, ultimately, just being in the here and now. And being in the here and now is not given to you on a plate. We've all got so many forces within us that will say, oh, no, we don't do the moment. We do the past, we do the future, but we don't do the moment. Sorry, because in this moment there isn't anybody. There's a person here, and all your personality and all your baggage is here, and you can project it into the future here. But when you're here, truly just here, there isn't anything, there isn't anybody. That's when you're free. That's when you see. But that takes virya. No, just bring yourself to what's in front of you. So you're taking responsibility, just as that as a simple example. You have to take responsibility for the environment that you're in, like this afternoon. You've got to take responsibility for that. I am here. I will take responsibility. I will not become the victim of this thing. I will not be pushed and pulled around by it, whatever it might be. I'm gonna stay present. I'm going to stay awake. I'm not going to pick and choose. I'm not going to have views and opinions. I'm not going to do it. I'm just going to be awake. So you have to take responsibility for this particular situation that we might find ourselves in this morning. It's been okay, but this afternoon, I don't know, maybe it won't, but it could become tends to warm up in here in the afternoon. It can become quite challenging. But just to let you know, just be the master of the situation. The master doesn't mean to be willful and that type of... That's willfulness. We don't do that. But you come here to meditate and to be and to bring the energy and the commitment to that event, to that decision you've made to come here today. So when these things come along, you've got to take responsibility for it. You've got to own that thing and become the master of it. And what you need in that situation is to be alive, is to be awake, the virya. So therefore, as much as you can. And it's so easy to get dozy and drop off. I mean, I do it. You know, I've not gone beyond that. But I do know that if I'm not prepared to bring myself to that, then it will become so much worse, and it will become a habit, because sleep, to lose that awareness, is also, as I touched on this morning, is a very fertile realm for Mara. That part of you that just doesn't want to, that wants to keep you trapped in the self personality, that looks for anything, any distraction whatsoever. Anything will do to take you away from just being with yourself. And this sleep thing is one of its favourite realms, because we all sleep anyway. It's a natural thing, and we all need sleep, but it exploits that natural function that we all engage with. Exploits it and then keeps us away from just being alive. But my point is, you have to own the situation. You own it. You take responsibility for it. And that's just an example. In many ways, that's quite a neutral thing, because we're actually we're having a relationship with the environment and the weather and the temperature and stuff. So that sort of thing doesn't really threaten us. But of course, that's only part of our experience of life. We must take that ownership, to own the situation, to own the experience, into everything that we do, everything that we think, say and do. And that's what we don't do. What we do is we project. We have a situation, you know, for example, there's just in your daily life, that with somebody comes and says something to you. Maybe you don't like what they say. Maybe it's, you know, something really not very nice what they say. How do you deal with that experience? What's your initial reaction to that? Do you actually become very aware of yourself and see that I'm at a crossroads here? I can go all sorts of ways here with this situation. Or do you, and that's owning the situation, where you own the experience, and then you take responsibility for your action. So do I go down an old familiar habitual, possibly an old habitual way of reacting, that I hit out verbally, I defend myself verbally, shoot out, or maybe I recoil and run away because that's too difficult to take. We've got our habits, it depends what it is, but we've got our way, we have a habitual way of reacting to that situation. But that's being the victim of it. That's being the victim of your habits, of your self-view. And you're looking after yourself, whether you feel a need to hit out to look after yourself or whether you feel a need to recoil and run away and look after yourself. It's always about number one. It's always about looking after number one. But that creates all sorts of... It just snowballs and goes from one thing to the other, as we all know with our experiences of life. Or do we instead own this? Do we own that moment? If somebody is dumping something on you, that you take that and you make a decision what you do with that. Yes, I'm owning this. This actually has got nothing to do with that person. You say, oh, you're doing this to me. You're the one who's making me like this. If it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be like this. We're all familiar with these things to one degree or another. Or do you open up, and this is where awareness comes, and you have the presence of being aware of being present with the situation and alive to it, where you have this thing that's dumped on you, and you accept it, and say, well, this is now I now own something. This is my possession. This possession I now have has nothing to do with that person. So therefore, I cannot give it them back. I cannot negate myself. I cannot somehow just make the excuse that nothing to do with me, Gov. Do you actually own it? Do you then own that experience and then own the reaction that you have to it, whatever it may be? Do you see yourself as the owner of that whole event? Or do you see yourself projecting and throwing it out and defending yourself, creating a world? Because for us, I would suggest that most of us throw it out. That's what we do. We find, however we react to these things to do with our habits, the way we've learned to look after ourselves. It's very, very complicated, mixed up with all sorts of obvious things and deeper things, etc., etc. But it's always a dualistic experience. There's always me and the thing out there, and that's what creates the karma. That's what makes the world go round. And now one thing runs to another, and on we go. And it's just this endless snowball that goes on that we just are the victim of. We're not the master in any way. And I don't mean master in the sense of being willfulness, but the master of learning to not go where you've been before, probably. Not to go down that reactive, habitual way that you've gone before, but to actually own the experience, become the owner. When you own something, you can do something with it. If you don't own it, you can't do anything with it. But what you can be is to be the victim of it. That thing can own you, but you can't own it. It's when you decide, I am the owner of this experience, that you can then begin to embark upon a journey of change, of transformation, of breaking habits, of breaking what are your habits, breaking your, hopefully as you wake up to yourself more and more, to see how you are creating your own dukkha, actually. The dukkha that you're experiencing there, when somebody throws something at you that you don't like, you are creating your reaction, the dukkha that you create through your reaction, you are the creator of the dukkha. We blame you, the one who's making me unhappy. You're the one who's doing these things to me. It's your fault. No, that's not true. That's a part of the world that we've trapped ourselves in. this dualistic world of self and other, and with a victim. And the victim means that there's no end to it. When you have a victim, you become a plaything of forces. You're a plaything that do anything with you, that throw anything at you. There he goes again. And then you create, through your reaction, you create the karma that will bring you back to those situations, that will create something that will come back and consume you again. And see that you are the creator of your own suffering. It has nothing to do with that person out there. And to see that is a massive leap. And that takes a long time to see that. Because what we do, yes, of course I earn some things, I'm like this, and we can play around with it. It's not like 100%, yes, I'm like this, I'm like that, blah, blah, blah. I own this and I own that. But actually, do we really own it? I own it because you're making me the victim of something. And so it becomes a bit sort of messy. but us trainees, hopefully, in time, and it's not overnight, we have to learn to own everything that we think and we say and we do. We have to own that. And when we can begin to own, then you can begin to change. In fact, you can change everything. Everything then becomes something that can change. But as long as you are not, you're not accepting it, you're not owning something, you're not embracing the thing, it will never change. You will still be the victim of whatever the circumstance, whatever the habit may be, whatever scenario unfolds in these things, you will just be dragged along. Creating karma and just see, well, this is the cause of suffering, this is why I'm suffering. I'm the one who creates my dukkha. I've been blaming my mother and my father for what they did to me when I was a child. And my husband and my wife and my boss, my teacher, the bus driver, the person who cuts me up when I'm driving my car. We have to wake up, and this is not simple stuff. This goes as deep as it can go. But as long as we feel a victim, even if a very, not just small things, but very, very important things, serious things that maybe happened in our life that we've carried all these years that we've never been able to do anything with. In fact, every time we come back and we turn it over, we're just actually creating even a bigger burden. It becomes heavier and heavier and heavier. Because we are always me here as the victim of something out there. And while that person who we project on, who we evoke from, say, years ago, while that person is out there, it will never change. That person will always be out there. They'll always be what you've made them into, what you think that they are, and that scenario will not shift. And the more that you return to that, this is where remorse and this is where we feel guilt and all of these things begin to become something that becomes bigger and heavier that we carry in our lives and that we can carry to our deathbed. And then be sucked into it at the last moment, possibly, about something, the regrets and stuff. You've never learned how to deal with these things because you've never owned the situation. You've owned a bit of it, you've owned some of it, but you've never owned half or all of it. You've never owned the other person. That person that you've been carrying all of these years and now somebody that you create in your own mind. You are the creator of that person. That, say, let's say somebody who died a long time ago. That person now lives in your creation. You are the creator. But we don't see it that way. We see it as an image that you're carrying from. We don't go there. We don't realize that I'm actually making the whole of this scenario. And therefore, because you can't see the truth, to see the wisdom of it, that actually you are creating the whole of it. Until you actually see that, you will never be able to deal with it. You will never be able to move forward. You'll never be able to unburden something. But once you learn to see that that person that you've been carrying, for example, or that situation, that scenario, whatever it may be, that you've been carrying that thing for years and years and years, actually is your own creation. You are making it. That thing does not exist until you create it in your mind. And when you create it, you then turn it into something. You then embellish it. Whereas, in fact, in itself, it's actually something quite neutral, quite empty. This is where emptiness comes into things. That everything is empty. Empty of what you've made it. All that you've made that thing into, like and dislike. All the views and opinions about that person. They're all your creation. The truth is, they're just an empty dharma, if you like. You want to be to see it. You're the one who then attaches all of these things to it, and you buy into all that you do, and then you become the victim of it, and then it's got you, like Mara. But hopefully, if you can begin to, this can be immensely challenging, because we can go into things that are very, very important, that have shaped your life, that helped to formulate you as you are. This is not a small thing, and to approach those things can be, well, it's too much. It can be too much. But what we can do is that we can begin to awaken to that truth in small things. Things that are not so important to you that you can't actually begin to open up to and begin to see how you are, your relationship, and how you create and how you project, and how, if you don't project, if you own, that you embrace and say, look, there it is. It is actually in itself an empty dharma. I'm about to create a world. I'm going to manufacture a world around that event that actually in itself is quite empty and quite neutral. This is the wonderment, if you like, of the mind and how it creates the world. You know, actually, it's not like that until you create it. Nothing is like that until you create it. You then create it and you become the victim of it. But you are the maker. You manufacture something, and then you buy into it, and then you can't extract yourself from it. All you do is feed it. And never ever realize that you've made it. And it's, for you, it's always out there. This whole dualistic notion that we've got, everything is out there. I'm here, and people and events, and everything is out there. We never see that there is no out there until we make it. And to wake up to that, and begin to wake up, because this goes right down into the roots of who we are, and we can't go there, really. It's terrifying, actually. We can go so far, well, it depends who we are and depends on the situation. But none of us can just throw the doors open. That's not going to happen. But what we can do is we can approach it in a gentle, in a kindly, and in a skillful way. Little by little, just things that don't threaten us so much, but things that we can actually learn to declutch from, learn to not buy into in the way that we did, and survive, as it were. It can be difficult. And that's the way that we approach it. That, I mean, I haven't used this analogy for a long time, actually. In fact, the brick wall. You know, somebody asks you to knock. Your boss, you're working on a building site, and your boss asks you, look, would you go and knock that that brick wall down, please. We need to get rid of it. It's got to go. And you stand over here and you look at the wall. You say, excuse me, are you having a laugh? I cannot knock that wall down. That's impossible. You know, I can't do it. So, well, come on, let's just have a think about this and just sit and ponder it and come up with, because actually you can knock the wall down. You can actually get rid of that wall for me. But if you think you're just going to go up to it and run into it and knock it over, of course, it's not going to happen. So come on, use a bit of intelligence here. So, oh, he's my boss, you know, I'd tell him to clear off normally, but he's my boss, so I've got to. So you go closer to the wall, and you see that this wall actually isn't one big solid mass, but actually it's a wall that's made up of lots of individual bricks, one laid next to each other and then on top of each other, that when all put together make this impenetrable wall. There's no way you're going to knock it over. But you've been asked to demolish the wall. And then the spark then comes, well, hang on, maybe there is a way of dealing with this wall. And you look around and you find a little scraper, a little bit of metal, scrapey thing, which, you know, you're not going to knock them all down, but what you can do is you can get up there and you can start to scrape out the mortar that holds the bricks. You can do that with this little tool. This tool won't knock the whole thing down, but you will be able to scrape the mortar out. Okay, it's not quick and easy, but it's a way forward. So you scrape it and you scrape it and scrape it, and then eventually you scrape them all and you push it, and the brick falls out. And you think, blimey, I can do it. But it's going to be a long job. I've got to be patient. I've got to be persistent and just stay with it, stay with it, and stay with it. But if I scrape each one, and that's what you do, you scratch each one, and slowly you remove each one, the top layer, then you come to the next layer, and so on. And in the end, because you stayed with it, vigilance, you've not given up, you've had the patience, you get to the last brick, and the wall is gone. So it's not impossible to knock the wall down, is it? That big brick wall, you've got to be joking. In the same way that you can look at yourself in your totality with all of your, no way, I can't go there. Of course you can't go there. You try to go there, if you managed to get there at all, which is unlikely, but if you did, you probably wouldn't come back. But what you can do, you can see that actually that thing, that mass of this heavy stuff that I've got, which is cloaked in darkness, fear, actually is a collection of lots and lots and lots of little things. So whilst I can't deal with the thing, it's too much, what I can do is I can give my attention to the small things. The small things that when all put together make this big thing. That I can deal with. Not easy, but that's within my realm of possibility. And so then you just contend with the small things in your life, the little things that irk you, the things that seem to in some way possess you, small things that not the big things, and then just begin to deal with those and see your relationship with these things, the small things. When you get up in the morning and there's no milk for your coffee, for your tea, because your partner, your housemates have drunk it all and not given you any thought and left you a bit so that you can have your coffee before you go to work. It's not a big deal, but it's quite, you know, it can be pretty irksome, but it's not the end of the world, is it? But you get a reaction. But you can deal, come on, you can deal with that. You can accept that. You can begin to work with that experience. Small things like that that would normally you would possibly create and start shouting and abusing. But you can learn to contain yourself and learn to see that, okay, there's no milk there for my coffee, but the way I'm feeling is by reaction to that. Nothing to do with the empty bottle of milk. We project onto the bottle. We project onto the person who took the milk. But you have to see your reaction and own it. Own it. I've got an opportunity here to either go down the familiar road and start getting upset and reactive to the fact that somebody's been selfish, thoughtless over this, or I can own that reaction and not feed it, not become the victim and be pulled around, because it just creates all sorts of other stuff, doesn't it? You know what these things are like. Or I can stay with it and just and own the reaction. Own the reaction. You can't own the milk and you can't own the person who's been selfish. You can't do anything about that. But what you can do is own the reaction from the event that you've experienced. Own it. This is mine. I am the creator. This has got nothing to do with my flatmate, actually. Although I project you the one. Yeah. That's what we do. Now you own your reaction. And from there, from owning it, you can begin to do something with it. And until you own it, you won't. You will always fall into the habit. You will be the victim. You will create the unpleasantness that can come from things like that, and all the suffering that can then you experience, and then you dump on other people. All of that is because you're not prepared to own it. But something like that, a small example like that, is something. This is one of the bricks in the wall. However difficult it may be, you can actually deal with it. And that's our training, that's what we do. We can't deal with the big things. We can try, but you'll be, well, you may pull it off, I don't know. But it's not, the training isn't about that, those things. It's about waking up to how you construct your world, how you construct your samsara, because you are the maker. Don't blame your mother and your father. You are the creator. You are the one that reinforces it, who carries it around, that makes it something heavy on your shoulder. That as time goes by, it gets heavier and heavier, because all you do is buying into the scenario. You're not looking at it skillfully. You're not looking at it with wisdom. What can I do with this? What I cannot change the past. Whatever that scenario may have been, it's done, it's gone. I can't go back in time and change it. So therefore, what can I do with this thing that sits in front of me? Well, you have to first of all wake up to know that this is what you've created. However difficult that may be, because you spent your whole life dumping it on, it's your fault, I'm like this. And somehow you've got to turn that around, begin to turn it around. And that's not easy, because what's in there, through all of that suffering, through all of that horrible stuff that actually in one way you don't want, of course you don't want, is self-identity. That's when the self, me, I'm the victim. When you feel the victim, that's when this idea of a self gets reinforced. The self doesn't mind whether it's a pleasant experience or an unpleasant experience, whether it's good or bad. It needs to be reinforced all the time. I exist, I exist, I exist, I exist. Because actually the reason why it's doing that is because it actually doesn't exist. But it's all the time, so it's looking for things. I'm the victim of this. So you get something like this and you can carry, oh, I'm the victim, I'm the victim, I'm me. And that's what it's all about. If you want to know, you want to get to the bottom of this. It's learning to own. And own the small things. And when you can begin to own, then you can begin to change. You can begin to wake up and you can begin to see. And you can begin to dismantle your samsara. And the way you dismantle it is that you don't get in there and do things with it, but you learn not to. You learn to break the habits that you've had that's always reinforced it, so that you begin to leave it alone. And when you leave it alone because you're not reinforcing, because you're not buying into continually, it will begin to lose its power and it begin to fade, and it will no longer be the mountain that it that you've made it into. You're the creator of mountains. It's no longer the mountain. It's no longer the thing that diminishes your life, that brings so much unhappiness to your life, that life is not very good, for example. That you are the one. And when you see that, the more you see that, you think, God, I can't believe this. This is unbelievable. It's from there that you can then begin to dismantle the thing that you consider yourself to be the victim of, because we've rejected, because we don't own. And I think that this, you know, we can talk about an example, a very simple example of not owning the situation, like not having milk for your coffee. Oh, well, you know, that's life. But you can look at the other side of the spectrum and see these deep things that so many of us can carry, that we do carry all of our life, full of all sorts of negative emotions, that we end up hating ourselves because of this. And these are not small things, these are big things. But actually, the essence is no different than when you get upset with your flatmate who's drunk the milk in the morning. It all comes, is one of the 10,000 things. Don't be deceived by the 10,000 things. The source, they all go back to the same source. And that, in this perspective, is that you're not owning the thing that you're experiencing. This dualistic thing is creating the stuff that you create, that then you disown, that this is not me, this is not this person out there, I haven't created this person, this is how this person really is. I've just found their characteristics. That's not how it is. Amazingly, unbelievably. But this is the journey, this is the path, this is the Dharma, this is the path of awakening, that you cannot imagine how you have created your own world. You just, okay, I've created, yeah, I'm like this, I'm the creator, but there is all this other stuff that I haven't created. But actually, you have. You've created a whole lot, stock and barrel. How unbelievable that may be to you. And you just have to, I don't know, you want to believe it or you don't, or at least give it the benefit of the doubt and open up to the possibilities that actually you are the creator. You make yourself, you make yourself the victim. That's the message. I wonder, what time do we, 35. I like you. It's something to ponder, because you know you can get into this and be, oh yeah. See that. But you can also go to areas of your makeup where you just won't go because you think no, that doesn't apply to this thing. This doesn't apply to this event in my life. I'm afraid it does. That event has come and gone. Anything that comes after that event is your creation. You make it. You put it there. You then develop a relationship with it. You hang labels on it. Good, bad, right, wrong, hate, love, all of that stuff is what you create. You then buy into it and say, well, this is the way it is. This is the way this person is. So you disown this thing that you've created. I didn't make this. This is the way they are. That's what you've got to get over, however long it may take. Because if you are prepared to give the benefit of the doubt, then you can begin to see, well, maybe I can change that person. Maybe that person I can actually turn into a different type of person or give them something in my relationship. This is where forgiveness comes, where empathy comes. It opens the door to so many positive emotions that you can begin to evoke to undermine this negative thing that you experience, that you think is nothing to do with you. You can begin to undercut things, because you begin to realize, actually, I can actually add things. I can add attributes to this person or this event. Because actually I've put all the other ones in the first place, which I thought were already there, nothing to do with me. But in fact, I'm putting them there. Therefore, I can add a few more now. Because you own it. When you own something, you can play with it, can't you? It's not something that's solid over there. You own it. Oh, right. I own that. I own this person now who's been this negative person that I've carried around for you. Well, how about if I can begin to bring something a bit more positive to this person? Because there isn't anybody in this world who's completely evil, I don't believe. So maybe you can begin to bring some empathy. Understand that they've got a history too. They're coming from somewhere. Anything that you can begin to soften, because you are making. Begin to soften that relationship that will then allow you to approach the thing without feeling a need to keep yourself protected from it. That can open up so much for you. The whole world changes. Because you see that you make it. Okay, well then make it into a pleasant world. You know, find some positive things to say about it. Here you have an event, you know, you can be all negative and moaning about something. Or you can turn it into something positive. You can talk about, oh, this weather is so hot, I can't do anything. All I want to do is sleep all day. I've got things to do. God, it's so hot. So uncomfortable. You can go down that road if you like, or you can say, well, you know, this is really quite pleasant. And it's something to enjoy and get out and enjoy, because it won't last that long. So I might as well get out and do something positive. There's a simple example. It's your world, isn't it? The environment is the environment. It's empty, it's neutral. It's neither good nor bad. It is just what it is. But you've decided it's something negative, or you decided it's something positive. You've created the world. There you are. There's a simple... Just watch yourself the way you do this. How you go into a situation and immediately you've got views and opinions on things and people. You immediately start to label people. You don't even know. You look at them and you decided by their appearance they're this type of person. And so you put them in a box somewhere. And it might be a negative, it might be, you know, it could be the other way. You could be one of great desire. And then you begin to, you buy into that, and then you begin to have that interaction with that type of person that you've made, and all your thoughts and that whole thing that you've actually manufactured. Well, then you've got the opportunity to make things positive rather than negative, have good views rather than bad views. As examples, I mean that's just touching the reality of this. But we need to get into the more the more important things that define you as a person. I am this sort of a person. I exist because I am this sort of a person, and I've got these likes and dislikes, and this is who I am. And then when you put that, when you've moulded that person, you then spend the rest of your life protecting it, because you're frightened that somebody will come and blow you away, or look through you, or so you create this person, and then you erect the barriers around you, so that you have to look after it. Hence, we embark upon life. But to see, begin to own. Own your thoughts, own your speech, own them, don't own them. And when you own them and you genuinely own these things, then you can begin to change. Then the whole dharmic, the amazing dharmic process of change can begin to kick in, can begin to work. That change, which actually has nothing to do with you. You don't make the change. You don't make yourself from this person, this type of person, to this type of person. That's not the Dharma. You can do that in the world. People do it all the time. Change their personas and appearance and all the rest of it. For whatever reason. The Dharma doesn't work in that way. It doesn't have an image that it wants to make you into. You have to learn to trust something that you will never know, that you will never own, that you will never possess it, you will never make it a tool for your own ends. Learn to trust. Learn to put that basic environment in place and see how things begin to drop off. Parts of your protective barrier, the thing that diminishes you, the thing that diminishes life so that it becomes unsatisfactory, how those things can just seemingly of themselves just begin to melt, begin to fall away. Often you're not even aware of these things, because it's nothing to do with you, because you're not actually doing anything. You're just creating the environment, and it actually begins to, it's like a snowman in the sunshine. You build the snowman, and then the sun comes out, and slowly it just, of itself, the snowman doesn't say, I am now going to melt. I want to melt. Have you ever heard a snowman say that? Snowmen don't say that. They just stand there with a carrot on the end of their nose. And when the sun comes out, the natural way of things is that it just begins to melt and fade away. Well, that's how the self and the warmth of the Dharma, and is prepared to stay with it, this is what happens. No reaction, nothing is expected of you. You don't go in there and start making yourself into from A to B. Just own it, accept it, own it. Don't follow the things that you've created. Just leave them alone. That's how it works. But this is, if you are prepared to just bring your focus into the whole notion of owning, don't stick it out there, owning is huge. Even small things, never mind big things, even small things. You begin to own that event. Own that thing that you are convinced is out there. There's a thing going on like this. Is huge. Immensely challenging. But that's the nature of the Dharma. How much are you prepared to be challenged? Because if you do own, begin to wake up and see, I am the creator. This is mine. This is my creation. I own this. It will have a big impact, and it will be the instigator of change. And I think it's something worth, very much worth pondering.